Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles, plus a free professional measure and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
But dude averages 18 yards after catch.
We get it. When you're passionate about something, you go all in. You live entirely in that world. That's exactly how Graybar is about renewable energy projects.
He's all fourth quarter, such a
sleeper. Join our league of clean energy at Graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. My name is Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on Twitter, on X, at JWright929ESPN. As always, you can listen live on the radio dial, 92.9 FM or 680 AM. But if you're away from the radio dial and you want to keep listening to all the great content here at the station, you can download the Odyssey app where you can listen for free, stream anytime, anywhere. You can even listen to programming on demand. Dennis Fuller's producing the program for us. Glad that he is with us. My co-host is, of course, the host of VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast. VSiN is primetime airing on weeknights. Also follow him on Twitter, on X, at 1TimMurray. Download the VSiN app where you can stream, listen, and consume all their great content. Tim, good day, sir.
My bags are packed. I'm ready to go. I'm flying down to South Beach for a little Orange Bowl after Wednesday night's show, baby.
Didn't quite roll off the tongue with the rhyming.
Yeah. I figured, I got midway through it, I'm like, I don't know if people are going
to
like this.
Is it supposed to be to Orlando?
No, that's about, isn't that like...
Well, no, I was just thinking about the rhyming. Orlando felt like it would have fit the meter.
Yeah, I probably should have just stopped after the first two lines, but...
Heading down to the old Orange
Bowl. Going to the Orange Bowl. Yeah, last time I was there, Notre Dame lost 42-14, and it could have been 100-0 in the 2012 season, 2013 National Championship. So hopefully a little bit better of a result, but yeah, man, we haven't talked in a while. I mean, we've talked, but we have not been on these airwaves in a while, and a whole lot is... unfolded. Hell, the last time we chatted was the day of Notre Dame, Indiana, and since then we've had some blowouts, we've had a lot of favorites win, and we've got four teams left fighting for a national championship.
So we will, of course, get into everything that's happened during college bowl season. We'll also do some bowl season awards. We'll wrap that up for college football this year. We'll get into the list during hour number two. Jaren Jackson Jr., spectacular last night, leading the Grizzlies over the shorthanded Mavs. But the Grizzlies are shorthanded. That's just kind of where we are on the calendar. Everybody at this point feels like they're shorthanded. Get into some NFL news and more. Also, great college hoop slate tonight. So we'll discuss Tim's thoughts on that. Give us where the market is on some of these games. We'll tell your story, and then we will get out of here. But I've had multiple opportunities to offer my opinion on the college football playoff. Tim, I'm giving you a blank canvas. When I say, when you think about the college football playoff, setting aside your Irish, now that we've seen the first round and the quarterfinals, where are you?
So there's a lot of ways to go. I'll start with this. It is an outlier what we are seeing this year, that teams with byes are losing. And I've been asked many times about it. Hell, my dad asked me about it, which, you know, it's always a scary
subject. Oh, boy, when you get the parental takes.
You know, like, I'm like, oh, God, where are we going with here? He's like, man, all these teams losing that had the bye, huh? And I'm like, yeah, well, they were all underdogs. So technically, the market has been accurate. Favorites are 8-0 in the college football playoffs. So I'll say this about that because I know
that's the only one that's covered Arizona State.
Yep.
Okay. So 8-0 and then 7-1, depending on when you got Clemson, I guess.
No, I think Clemson, there might have been some shops that closed 14, but I think majority of the week, and I think consensus, that game was under 2 touchdowns. So, yeah, that was a Texas cover, even though it didn't feel like it was the whole way out. I still come away, and, you know, we'll get into, I'm sure, the dumpster fires of the bowl season, SEC. I still think what I said prior to the playoff, I'll still stick to my guns. I think outside of the seeding, which I think is fair to get tinkered with, and I think ultimately that will be the case, I still don't have that big of a issue with the teams that got in, even though SMU, Indiana, Tennessee all got beat up pretty good in that opening round. I just think the biggest thing for me, and I don't know how to fix it, and maybe it, I do think it's a bit of an outlier where one of the highest power-rated slash talented teams in the country ends up being your 8 seed. We got to figure out a way that the 1 seed isn't playing and being an underdog in their first game of the college football playoff. But I once again, I try to live, and I think most people listening to this program and have heard me talk before, I try to not get too high, not get too low, don't want the hot takes flowing, all of that. And I just think it's going to be a bit of an outlier. But if this thing was just your normal, hey, Arizona State and Boise State, you're in, cool, but you're going to be the 11 and 12 seed, we would have had what? Ohio State 1, Texas 2.
I'm glad you mentioned it because I wrote it out right before the show.
So Ohio
Oregon,
State won.
Oregon's one.
Oregon won, excuse me.
Oregon would have been one.
Yep.
Georgia would have been 2. Texas would have been 3. Penn State would have been 4. Now, we can, I guess, quibble, would they have changed the rankings if they knew the format was different? I don't know. I'm just going off of what they gave us, the rankings 1 through 12, with your point of putting Arizona State at 11 and Clemson at 12. That would have meant our first round matchup would have been Notre Dame hosting Clemson.
Pretty good.
Ohio State hosting Arizona State.
Might have been fun.
Tennessee hosting SMU.
I'm sure Tennessee fans would have preferred that.
I think anyone would have preferred that was playing Ohio State. The 8-9 game would have been Indiana hosting Boise.
That would have been a fun game, too.
If the favorites would have won, we would have wound up with Notre Dame, Penn State. Who would have ever seen that game happening? We would have wound up with Ohio State and Texas. Sound familiar?
Yeah.
We would have wound up with Oregon and Indiana or Boise, however you want to say, 8-9. Sure. I think Indiana probably would have been favored at home, but that would have basically been a pick 'em.
Oregon would have preferred that.
And Georgia would have hosted Tennessee or whatever. Georgia in the bowl game would have been against Tennessee.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest takeaway for me is that I don't have an issue with the auto bids. I want conference championships to mean something. You win your conference, you should get in, a la the NCAA tournament. Auto bids. When we get to NCAA tournament time, we can discuss conference tournaments and my thought process there. And then I like the G5 getting represented, but Boise State, as much as I love the people of Boise, had a great trip up there after we signed off before Christmas, went up there, enjoyed myself, enjoyed the Potato Bowl. Thomas Hammack apparently enjoyed it too, the head coach of Northern Illinois in many ways.
Good for him.
It was very satisfying. Very satisfying if you saw that clip making the rounds right before Christmas. But it's hindsight. But we can improve, right? And it felt like, and I don't know, maybe this is the Notre Dame fan in me, but it felt like the whole reason, not the whole reason, but one of the biggest reasons we had the bye was like, whoa, 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 Notre Dame doesn't play a conference championship. They can't be getting a bye. It's like, okay, so they'll play a home game. And they did.
Well, and
they want the conference championships to still mean something. Because in the scenario that you laid out, the final rankings, the SEC and the Big Ten championship would have been completely meaningless.
The only way that you could say it would have had some meaning is by Penn State backdooring its way in there, that they would have backdoored their way to a 4 seed.
To the bye.
Yeah.
Which is fair.
And honestly, I mean, the Texas-Georgia game went to overtime. Like, you know what I mean? I really think, I guess where I've netted out is I have viewed it as because they put it together largely at the 11th hour, even though they'd originally put it together, then the SEC takes Texas and Oklahoma, and everyone goes, whoa, how dare they? And then all the while, Kevin Warren and the Big Ten are just stalling while Fox figures out how to navigate USC and UCLA to the Big Ten, and then all of a sudden the alliance is dead. Remember that? That was fun. That was a good firm handshake. You know, real gentlemen don't need paperwork. And maybe you should have gotten some paperwork. Just a thought here. And so you wound up with the, well, now we've got to refire up this playoff because now all these other conferences, the smaller conferences, are trying to, you know, hang on for dear life for relevancy. And so you refire up largely the same format, but then you now have fired up the same format with leagues that are not what they were originally designed when you originally designed the playoff. And so I kind of viewed it all along as, A, this is a work in progress. I mean, we basically threw a playoff together. We knew there were going to be some tweaks, and this is kind of like everybody agreed to it. And so I don't have a ton of sympathy. What I do, I guess where I would push back on you a little bit, are we sure the buys didn't matter? Because it's not like in the NFL where we're going to finish week 18 and two teams are going to get a 1 week bye and everybody else is playing this week. Teams basically got a 3+ week layoff. And I don't think it would, I want to be very clear. I don't think it would have mattered in Ohio State, Oregon. You could have talked me into it mattering for Arizona State. Arizona State, one thing we see in football when you have a layoff is you're really sloppy with your tackling and kind of the defensive side of the ball. Well, Arizona State falls behind immediately because of poor tackling and allowing just these massive explosive plays to the point at which you and I are thinking like, oh boy,
here we go.
Beat down. Here comes the route. Well, as the game continued to go on and Texas's offense continues to do what Texas's offense does, which is not a whole heck of a lot, well, the game started to even out. I think the biggest issue I have with it, and I don't know if there is a solution, I think at first we thought the byes were going to be an advantage. I'm not convinced they're an advantage. With the timing layoff.
Yeah, I think it's a little too early to tell because I think your point has been overlooked, which is Ohio State, Tennessee, Notre Dame, Indiana, those were the four, right, that didn't play in their conference championship because Boise State did. Boise State got the bye.
Yes.
Penn State lost. They played in their conference championship. SMU lost. They played in their conference championship. Lost in the conference championship. Clemson. But, you know, Notre Dame, Ohio State, these teams got a layoff to get to their first round game. So, and also I'll say this, it did feel a little bit FCS-y in this regard. If you ever watch the FCS playoffs, and by the way, last night, awesome, really fun game.
There will be a tell your story from that.
North Dakota State shouts to their 10th FCS title. Very fun game there last night. But what I mean by it is that if you look historically, Jeffrey, at the FCS playoffs, the home team like always wins.
Absolutely.
And we saw that in the FBS.
And by the way, they win in very similar fashions to what you're describing. They win in routes.
Right.
It's not even just like, oh, well, the home team prevails. It's like, I mean, what was it I was watching last week?
Someone won like 44-7 in like a semifinal.
I think it was Montana State. I think they dominated their game. You saw Notre Dame score not indicative. They dominated Indiana. They win 27-17. Ohio State wins 42-17. Penn State wins 38-10. And Texas was really the only one that had a quasi-competitive game against Clemson, but they still won and covered that contest. So, you know, home field means a whole hell of a lot. You know, all of those teams covered their first round games. So is there a situation where could you do it like this? Okay, Boise State and Arizona State, you're not going to get a bye, but we'll give you a home game. You win your conference, you get in, and you don't get a bye. What if you host a home game?
Like the NBA used to do.
Yeah, with like the top four seeds
like
or whatever.
One year where it's like if you won your – it used to be – now they seed it 1-8 based on record, but it used to be, I think one time the Grizzlies had to technically go on the road because they weren't a division champion. I think it was against Portland. Portland did win their division. They had to go on the road for the best of seven, but it was kind of the same thought process. If you are a division winner, you do get at least a home game, but it's still seeded 1-8. It's not seeded like the NFL where the Vikings at 14-3 are going to be the 5 seed, but they do give some value to a conference title game.
Yeah, so I don't know. I mean, it's all a work in progress. I think my biggest takeaway was blowouts happen, and guess what? They're going to be blowouts in Wild Card Weekend this weekend. There were blowouts in the 14 playoff. The thing I tweeted out after the initial weekend happened was I thought the atmospheres we saw, the build-up to Notre Dame, Indiana, 4 hours of college game day, and then the same thing replicated the next day. To me, that's what is amazing about the sport that you and I love. Neutral site games that feel just don't have that same college energy.
Even a game, like let's take the Arizona State-Texas game, which is unquestionably was a great football game. It had everything you wanted. It had drama. It had big plays. It had swings. It had everything that you want in a football game. There was just something missing because of, you know, it's in Jerry's world. It's like a hollow Jerry's world.
Atlanta.
Sorry, that one was in Atlanta. You're right. I was mixing up Arizona State's beatdown of Iowa State in Jerry's world.
I was on the wrong side of that one.
Mm-hmm.
I understand that. Bowl games, in order for this to work, you had to incorporate the bowl games, so they're probably not going away. And there was something, and I know, obviously, tragedy happened in New Orleans, so we didn't have the triple header on New Year's Day, but there was something, despite the 34-0 lead for Ohio State, there was something kind of nice about New Year's Day at, you know, 4 o'clock Central in the beauty of the Rose Bowl, having that game be played. I will say that I know a lot of people discussed it. Come on, man. Like, we have no night game, and you start the game on ESPN2. You can't tell the teams, hey, we're going to push it because Arizona State and Texas are at overtime. Hold your horses. We'll have the stealth bomber flyover coming up in 30 minutes.
Yeah, I just...
there is no evening game.
I just think, though, again, this is uninformed speculation. I think it's just so regimented. The Rose Bowls, the Rose Bowl kicks off at, what was it, 4... Or maybe whatever. The Rose Bowl kicks
5 Eastern, 2 Pacific.
Yeah, kicks off at 2 Pacific. And it's like,
so we can get the sunset going into the fourth quarter.
It's like, okay, what's a stealth bomber fly at?
Very fast.
Let's see. Top speed. I'm going to guess. All right, let's see. So, top speeds.
Is it fair to say I was right on very fast?
I mean, it's got to go at least 700 miles an hour, right?
Wasn't the stealth right, bomber, so it goes wouldn't around, they fly to the Middle East, do what they had to do, and fly home?
Why do they do this? 1,000 feet per second? Nobody uses that. 305 meters per second? Like, who needs that conversion? At least, like, if just at least, like, give me knots. Let's see. How fast? Still 1,000 feet per second. I'm just going to go out on a limb and guess that even if you held the game 25 minutes, the bomber from where it's taken off would have been just fine getting there in time.
Yeah.
And telling the players, hey, hold off for 30 minutes. I mean, it's not ideal, but they would have. Jeremiah Smith still would have been able to do what he had to do, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I will say, like, I was feeling bad for, like, people that bet Oregon. There's nothing worse than the feeling of, like, if you are someone who just has one TV and you're sweating out the end of Texas, Arizona State, and then when the game kicks off, you're already down 14-0. Like, that's a tough scene.
Yeah, I was kind of kicking myself because I did a 4-hour pregame show on VSiN New Year's Day, and I really had talked myself into Ohio State. By the way, I know it was a long time ago, but I think I was right on Ohio State over Tennessee.
Yeah, no, I can agree.
I didn't end up betting Ohio State, and I was very angry with myself. I was like, ah, oh, man. And as soon as that game started, I'm
well,
like,
there
yep,
is, there
here
is,
they are.
There is with Ohio State, if there is a little bit of, and I'm tempted to do it this week, but I'm not sure if I will. There is a little bit of the NFL where when a team looks awesome the previous week, think about fading them the next week just because it's tough to look like that. But I think what we're realizing is if this goes the way that it looks like at this point in the playoff, the best thing that happened to Ohio State was the Michigan loss.
Yes.
Because it made them wake up and sit there and go, Jeremiah Smith, Ebuke, like, we've got three NFL receivers. Let's figure out how to get them the ball.
So, I don't know if you have Ohio State fans in your life.
I have a couple.
They kind of suck.
They're very abrasive.
So, I get it. You want to beat, you know, the team up north. You guys are the odds-on favorite to win the national championship right now. That's better than beating your rival. I don't care what anyone has to say. Outside of maybe Army and Navy, you win a national title, it doesn't matter who you beat in the regular season or who you lost to. And I don't live in that rivalry, but don't give me this BS. Well, I'd much rather beat Michigan than win a title. No, you wouldn't, you liars. The goal is to win championships, and you've got an opportunity to win a national championship. And
yeah,
you're
Michigan
probably going to win a national championship.
But Michigan has a, like, Michigan is elite at getting under their skin.
Oh, I know.
Like, you
and
do
it's,
the
it's
whole,
like,
like,
it's
oh,
like
well.
Having that annoying friend. Look, I've had a dude trolling me on social media telling me that Notre Dame sucks for, like, the past 10 weeks. And every week it was, Navy's going to beat you. Then it was, Navy's a fraud. Army's going to beat you. Army stinks. USC's going to beat you. USC stinks. Georgia, you're going to play. He told me that Riley Leonard wouldn't finish the first half. And then it was, oh, they didn't have any yards and backup quarterback. I'm like, you knew all along the backup quarterback. There are just people that can get under your skin. And I get it from an Ohio State standpoint. But at the end of the day, right now, you just pulverized Tennessee and Oregon. And you're a 6-point favorite over Texas, and you will be a touchdown or more favorite against Tennessee, Notre Dame, or Penn State. I guess at this point, they can still be a little bit agitated because they haven't won the title yet. And I'm not a Ryan Day guy. Don't let me start that. The dude was born on third base. His whole, you know,
everything Jim Harbaugh said was true.
Ohio tough. Like, all right, dude, well, there has been some moments where you aren't tough in Michigan games. But you got Jeremiah Smith and you've got Emeka Egbuka, and maybe you should stop trying to get cute with Travion Henderson and Quinshon Judkins, and you should realize, like he told us, that no one can stop me one-on-one. And Jeremiah Smith had, what, 187 receiving yards against Oregon.
You know what? You know what fascinates me about this crop of coaches that are all in that Ryan Day age? All of them worship Spurrier. How many times did Steve Spurrier care when his team got called soft? Like, whatever. I'll keep throwing it. Like, it's just, it's almost like somehow Michigan has mind-warped Ryan Day to believe, like, if you can't win a national championship by being a predominant running team, that you somehow didn't win a national championship. Like, imagine if we nitpicked 2019 LSU, like, come on, they didn't really run the ball that great.
I mean, Joe Burrow threw 60 touchdowns.
Man, like,
but,
you know, I mean, I know Allaire had some good stats, but like, he wasn't really a dominant. He didn't salt games away in the fourth quarter. I mean, for God's sakes, to beat Alabama, they had to run a fake quarterback draw. Like, that's not real football.
There is something, and I'm sure we'll discuss it more on Friday. Fingers crossed, no travel issues on my return from Miami.
Well, I am worried. Are you flying American?
No.
What are you flying?
Southwest.
All right. Weirdly, I feel better about that.
I mean, bags for free. I'm a knock on wood, man. Knock on wood. I mean, I'm a big proponent of that company. Not a sponsor. They can sponsor me if they'd like.
Well, they're too busy trying to get sponsoring conferences.
That's true. But when I look at Ohio State, as much as, and you know me, I would love to get on Texas' side right here. But there is part of me like, what is
if this? We've been waiting to see who the machine was going to be. Yeah, are they finally the machine?
Is this 2019 LSU? And I'm not saying they, you know, once again, let me preface it. They're not 2019 LSU. 2019 LSU didn't
lose
football games.
But your point is, relatively speaking.
And I bring that up because I remember doing my show in 2020, January of 2020, right? And the I forget what the point spread was. It was like I
can remember. Which do you want, the original line, the alt line? What would you like?
Yeah, whatever it was.
Six
against
and a half,
Clemson.
I think. It was all maybe right. 5.5, 6.5, something
and
like that.
And you know me, and I'm like, I don't know. LSU,
a lot of points.
It's a lot of points. Clemson's been there before. And, you know, my co-host across the way from me, who is as square as they come, is like, I'm playing LSU. And I turn on that game. I think Clemson scored first.
Not only that, if I recall, because I had multiple opportunities, this was one of those ones where even my wife will probably remember it as a win. They shut him out in the first quarter. And so it offered many, many opportunities for live bets.
Yeah. So there is a worry for me, like,
okay, can I push back just a little bit?
Sure.
Will Howard is not Joe Burrow.
No.
And here's the thing.
Look,
awesome against Tennessee. I also think that, like, Tennessee had a really crappy game plan. And he hit some really big plays against Oregon.
Oh, his throw to Egbuka was incredible.
I still am not you know what it is? It's the same thing when you and I were talking about, why can't I acknowledge the Vikings are very good. I was never a Vikings hater. I was never like, they're frauds. But I kept thinking about it in the terms of, are they on the same level as the Lions and the Eagles? And I told you, I just can't get there because of Darnold. And I'm not trying to be just prisoner of the moment, but we've seen what we saw on Sunday night from Sam Darnold in really big games. I still keep thinking, Texas has got a really, really good defense and a really good front. And I don't think that they're going to be so egotistical that they're going to sit there and go, we're going to man up Jeremiah Smith.
Well, I do want to point this out because I want to bet Texas. I haven't bet it yet, and I think if you do want to bet Texas, I don't think there's a real rush.
No, I think wait.
Because right now, over at VSiN.com, the company that I work for, we have betting splits, and it's super early, right? The game's on Friday. General public people don't bet until day of the game. 84% of bets right now are on Ohio State. Like, everybody, it's so funny, and I get it, right? Two high-profile games, two butt-whippings, you know, win by 25, win by 20, and the 20-point win was bigger than that, to be honest, right? It was 34-0, and they
That was the smallest margin of victory Ohio State could have won by.
Yeah. So, and then what did we see from Texas? A team that had a big lead, squandered it, and if there isn't a questionable call late in the game, maybe they lose to Arizona State.
It was almost a similar script to Clemson, except Clemson couldn't like finish the deal. Clemson couldn't get the stops to finish the deal.
Right. So there is part of me that's like, maybe Ohio State is that juggernaut. And also, if you think back to not last year, because I think last year was a little bit different, but I think 2 years ago when UConn hoops made the NCAA tournament and they were, I believe, the 3 seed going into the NCAA tournament that year, and they just absolutely steamrolled everybody in
their path.
You're
bringing a tear to my eyes.
Covered every game.
I love those kids.
Really no concern whatsoever. You know, destroyed Iona. They're going to be tough. Iona, you know, they're coached by Rick Pitino. I think that was kind of close to the number.
I think that wound up being one of the closest games.
Based off of the point spread, yeah. St. Mary's, I believe they had an injury. They ended up winning. And then once the Sweet 16 rolled around, 23-point win, 28-point win, 13-point win, won the title by 17.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like,
those were unbelievable kids.
Is this Ohio State team 2023 UConn hoops? Maybe. I don't know.
I certainly think we have to consider it. Like, to me, honestly, I hate saying this. I feel like in terms of, because you know me, I've not been a Notre Dame hater. In fact, I've sometimes kind of talked you into like believing in Notre Dame. I think this is their toughest matchup.
Penn State?
No, I think
you think Ohio. You think Notre Dame is Penn State? Sorry,
I'm sorry.
You think Notre
Texas,
Dame is
no,
Ohio State?
No, I think Texas is Ohio State's toughest matchup. And I think whoever
totally.
They play in the next game, it's I maybe Ryan Day can do Ryan Day things, but
yeah. I think if Notre, I'll say this: if Notre Dame makes it to the national championship, I will be elated that my favorite team that I've watched so intently my entire life has made it there. I will be fully anticipating a blowout because they don't have the firepower offensively, especially with Jeremiah Love, and we'll talk about that. He's not healthy. He's not even close to healthy, and he's the most explosive player that they have from an offensive standpoint. And while you can beat Georgia in the fashion that they did, I think you could probably beat Penn State in the fashion that they just beat Georgia. Can't do that against Ohio State. Not this team.
No, and I think that's going to be the same thing with Penn State. Like, how is it going to be any different than what we saw? Was that October? It's going to be on a neutral site too.
Yeah, like it's a fast track.
Yeah, I just
like it's one of those things. Did you? I just spaced. Did you mention Georgia Clemson
earlier this year?
I'll say Notre Dame Ohio State. If it came to that, would kind of feel a little bit like Georgia Clemson, where Georgia or Clemson was like holding on like on the back of someone's jersey for dear life, like, oh my god, and then at the end of the game it was just the floodgates opened.
Yeah, you'll see it where like a defense can keep your team in it and like at arm's length for long enough, but then eventually the dam breaks.
Yeah, but we'll see. I mean, and look, as a Notre Dame fan,
honestly,
what
you know
what
really
would
talk me into, it'd be like Michigan Washington last year.
Yeah,
because I want to be. I want to put. I don't. I think Notre Dame can stay within 30.
It wouldn't be TCU Georgia.
No, I don't even think it'd be. I don't even think it'd be Notre Dame Alabama.
No, I don't. Yeah, I don't think so. But it wouldn't. Yeah, I and look, Penn State. You know, give them credit. I mean, outside of having the ball on the 1 yard line and not giving it to Tyler Warren 4 straight plays back in October. Like they were hanging tough with Ohio State, even though they scored 6 points offensively. So I don't know who would be the better matchup. I could say this: if there's any Penn State or Notre Dame fans listening, after the game concludes on Thursday night, go buy yourself some burnt orange because that's your only chance to win the national title. In my opinion.
I totally agree because Texas's offense will just disappear. You know what was last thing on Notre Dame before we take a break and get into our bowl season awards. You know what struck me about that game?
Which one? Arizona State, Texas?
I'm sorry, the Notre Dame win over Georgia.
That Marcus Freeman out-coached Kirby Smart?
No, that actually didn't surprise me. I'm on the Kirby's a dumb train. That kickoff return is one of the most under-discussed plays like of my lifetime. That kickoff return was what truly sealed the game, because that allowed Notre Dame to have a 3-score lead and they could play the clock, because you knew Georgia was going to really struggle to just sit back and throw their way back into it. I can't even remember the last time I saw a kickoff return against Georgia. And like that play, I feel like has just been completely under-discussed in terms of why they won.
So can I get a little Notre Dame nerdy for you real
sure.
quick?
Now, to be clear, I understand Notre Dame has had phenomenal special teams. Like, they take pride in it. But a kickoff return means different than, like, a block punt or a fake punt, like, all that.
The crazy thing about the forced fumble at the end of the first half and the kickoff return for a touchdown, those were two people they picked up in the portal, and to be honest, kind of really didn't do anything all year.
Yeah.
R.J. Oben was an edge rusher from Duke. They got him. He had zero sacks all year. And fans were like, where is Oben? Like, I think we spent big money on him. Where is he? He's the one who came off the edge, got the sack fumble on Stockton. And then what, 15 seconds or whatever it was from a game time standpoint, Jaden Harrison, who was at Marshall, was a kickoff return specialist at Marshall. He had... I don't even know what his longest kickoff return of the year was. 30 yards? Like, had done nothing from a kickoff return standpoint. And, I mean, it was a really badass kickoff return. He kind of came inside, cut it out a little bit. Yeah, no, it's a good point. I mean, it was surprising to me to see Notre Dame make those types of plays when they ultimately did against a program that, I'll be honest, you know, I was there against Ohio State a year ago. Notre Dame should have beat Ohio State. They found a way to lose that game. I was kind of being like, all right, when are they going to blow this? And when they didn't get it on 4th-and-1 on the Riley Leonard, you know, yeah. quarterback draw, I'm like, oh, here we go. And defense makes a stop. Then they get called for what, a delay of game on 4th-and-7, make it 4th-and-2 again. They bring the deep offense back out. Georgia does. I'm like, well, here we go. Don't get it. So, yeah, it was impressive, but I think the ceiling for Notre Dame and Penn State is a title appearance unless Texas wins. I think Penn State and Notre Dame fans, or Ohio State haters, however you want to look at it, should be enormous Texas fans on Friday
yeah,
night.
No, I agree with you. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, let's recap bowl season. We'll do our bowl season awards, everything from favorite games to our bowl season Heisman winners. We'll do all that when we come back right here on Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Whether you want to
buy, buy, buy
in a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market, Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
We have had another firing in the NFL. We'll get into that during the next segment when we get into the list. But now, we'll wrap up college football bowl season with our bowl season awards. All right, Tim.
So, hold on real quick, real
all right,
quick.
Go ahead.
I can walk to the Raiders facility from my house.
Yes.
It's a little bit of a walk. It's like a mile and a half. Should I go put my
resume
in? What do you think? That's the firing. I know. Sorry.
Spoiler alert.
I know you were trying to leave a little teaser action there.
Because we know people don't have the internet.
Sorry.
That's
a good line.
I think I'm going to say no.
But back in the day, they'd be stuck to the radio and not turned out on commercials so they'd know who the firing was.
I think I'm going to say no, because doesn't this feel like Tom Brady's about to hire a coach? You know better. You're out there.
Yeah, Tom Brady's definitely going to be involved. I mean, is it a...
Are we about to get... Is it a
Vrabel off?
Well, I was about to say, are we about to have the situation where the best
Wayne
person
Brady is what? Oh, sorry.
Well, who is whoever Vrabel's agent is he about to be like the man with all the power? Is he about to be in Sexton territory?
Who was it? It wasn't Ben McDonald. Ben McDonald, not Ben McDonald, right? Is that him? Ben Johnson. Sorry,
Ben McDonald was the pitcher from LSU. Yeah,
yeah, he's now an analyst for the Orioles. Yeah, it does feel like Vrabel is going to be, you know, doing the old Monty Burns right now. Like,
yes.
Excellent. You know, New England, the team I played for, or my old buddy Tom Brady. Where shall I go?
Or, neither, I mean, like, I neither, literally. I mean, it actually sounds like he could have his choice. Like of any, I'm not
going to the Raiders. I'm sorry. I'm not. And we'll talk more about this. I'm sorry. I don't mean. Why would I go to the Raiders? Outside of being my neighbor, why would you go to the Raiders over the Patriots? And I get it. Both those divisions have a supervillain. Patrick Mahomes in one, Josh Allen in the other. But the difference is, I believe in Drake May, and the Raiders. Who the hell is playing quarterback for them?
My AOC.
Who?
My AOC.
Oh, yeah. I'll take Drake May.
Mm-hmm. No, we can get in it because I think there's. I actually think there's some interesting coaching carousel aspects, especially considering like, hey man, there's something I want to discuss with you about the way that it's been going because I think it's interesting that it's kind of been overlooked as a story. So we'll discuss that. Team of Bowl season. And I'm basically saying since we last talked, so
Memphis not included?
Yeah, I'm saying if it's not a game that we talked about, I'm saying it's since, you know, December the 24th. It pains me. How's it not Ohio State?
Oh, yeah. I mean, think about, and I hate the word narrative, but think about the narrative on Ohio State. Should they fire Ryan Day? Oh, they can't win the big one.
I don't think it was should they fire Ryan Day. It's are they going to?
When will they? I mean, there was a worry in the Notre Dame land. What if they fire Ryan Day? Are they going to go get Marcus Freeman? He went there.
Yeah. Well, there was. You want to talk about Vrabel? There was considering, is Vrabel going to, are they going to be able to present a package to Vrabel that's like, hey, you don't have to do all the stuff you say you don't want to do, but we need you to coach the football team.
Yeah, so I think that's the obvious. I think it's Ohio State. I honestly think you could put Notre Dame in there.
Yep.
I think those would be the two obvious. I'll give you a consolation a little further off the radar. The BYU Cougars went out and whooped that tushy in the Alamo Bowl in a game that there weren't really opt-outs, right? That was a game that I believe would be line them up. We're going to play it like it is. And BYU, who had a phenomenal season, was on the precipice of maybe making the playoff before a couple late losses, to go in prime time on December 28th to beat Shador, to beat Travis Hunter in the fashion that they did. I mean, that was a thorough butt whipping.
I have decided I am flagging BYU as maybe the best non-Power 2 job. If you are familiar with the finances of BYU, and if you look at what they've been doing on the recruiting trail, like I'm starting to wonder like if that we're sleeping on that job. Because they're spending, I mean, what? They're just going to get the number one recruit in
college basketball. High school basketball, right?
Yeah.
I still wonder, and I know their color analyst quite well. His name's Hans Olsen. He's awesome. I've done, you know, some bowl games with him. I should ask him this.
Is he related to Max?
No. He is related to...
Max Olsen, the quarterback, not the writer.
Yeah, no. I'll tell you who he's related to if I can remember here in just a moment. But I won't look it up like Mach 5 here.
Yeah. By the way, I was pretty close. I think I said 700 miles an hour. It's like 681.
But I do wonder if basketball will be easier for them.
Well, yeah. I mean, there's always going to be the idea of if
Merlin
Olsen,
the Hall of Famer, his uncle.
So there's always going to be the reality of, and this is kind of the story of Kentucky basketball. If you're in a league where you know we're not going to outspend in football, it's a whole lot easier to go buy three or four basketball players than it is to buy an entire football roster.
And I was talking to someone in the Big 12, and they were discussing like this, you know, rev share thing that's about to come about, right? Which I wasn't really fully up to date.
Oh, I mean, if you want to, here's the real doomsday scenario. Everyone that's doing this, you know, where are we now? I believe, educatedly,
that the biggest reason these numbers have gone insane this year, this recruiting cycle for NIL and all this, is because what you are having is all of these schools that maybe they don't have the collective money, they're already promising rev share money. If the House settlement comes up against another hurdle and they tell them to go back in April, you ain't seen nothing like we're going to see in May, because all these people are promising money, which they think they're going to have, but they don't have it right now.
But I think my bigger point was, when this ultimately happens, to your initial point, BYU is going to be fully funded.
Oh, yeah.
And the Big 12, not everyone in that conference is going to be fully funded. And they're going to be scraping nickels together to try to get to that point. And I think BYU is going to be like, yeah, we're good. We're rolling through.
I wholeheartedly agree. All right, dumpster fire of the bowl season. I am usually not the guy that, like, tries to make too much out of bowl season, but I have no problem kicking these people yet again. Just shout out to the ACC. Again, the only real problem that I had with the way that the playoff went down is that when you include Notre Dame, even though I know they're not purely an ACC team, we let three ACC teams in from what should be a one-bid league.
Yeah. I mean, the flip side, though, is my dumpster fire was the hot take artists after the Indiana, SMU, and Clemson loss.
Yeah.
Because they got real quiet when Tennessee got obliterated by Ohio State. And then Alabama, as a 16.5-point favorite, went out and lost to a depleted Michigan team and looked horrendous doing so. But it was raining. I don't care. You know, so
that was one of the all-time worst for your boy. I had Bama minus 10. It closed at 17.
So here's the thing about
7 points of CLV there, baby.
Yeah, I know.
That's the most I've ever gotten in my life.
And not one?
It's the most. I can never remember. Like, I can remember getting a field goal thinking, like, oh my God. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I've never had a situation where it was a full touchdown.
I had Navy plus 7.5, and they closed a favorite against Oklahoma this bowl season, and I was convinced they were going to get blown out early on in that game.
Your boy had the other one.
So, bowl season can be fun. I had Michigan plus 11.5, so I was like, well, I'm done here. So I threw Alabama on some money line parlays, and they go out. I had a chance to middle, but they didn't get it done. But yeah, that was it was Kiffin. It wasn't DeBoer. It was Kiffin and his incessant tweeting. By the way, you knew Ole Miss was going to go out and dominate.
It's remember I told you, if you can only make one bet in bowl season, it's Ole Miss. They were going to play everybody.
And they did, and Jackson Dart threw for four bills, and at least he put his money where his mouth is against a Duke team that didn't have their starting quarterback and I thought was overrated all year regardless. It got real quiet on the SEC front after Tennessee got smacked up, but I think it's hard to say that the ACC isn't, you know, the dumpster fire of the bowl season, even though, I mean, New Year's Eve was tough. When you have back-to-back games of Alabama and then South Carolina losing to Illinois and Shane Beamer trying to lose his mind, I'm like, let him through. Bert Bielema would have just manhandled old Beamer ball there.
More on that in just a moment. I also could have just thrown out Marshall. Like, get off it. Like, you opted out of a bowl game and then you tried to do the, it's the transfer. It's like, there were a bunch of teams that had more than 24 guys. Like,
yo, shouts to, I'll give a shout out here to Washington State, man. They lost everybody. They lost their quarterback. They lost their coach, their offense coordinator, defense coordinator. I think they had like 20 some odd players. And they went out. They were winning after the first quarter. They were competitive. Your boy had Syracuse for size in that one. And I was like, oh my God, I'm going to lose this game.
All right. I'm going to be that guy. You know why they had to do that, right? Well, number one, it's San Diego.
It was the only game on Fox?
No, it's San Diego. I know it's San Diego versus Shreveport, and I'm not going to take that route. But those schools are the Holiday Bowl and I believe the Vegas Bowl
the former members of the Pac-12 to fill out those spots. They're contractually obligated. They would have owed. They would have owed millions if they didn't go.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
But and then look, man, and you know, I watched that game very closely because, as I mentioned, I didn't lay the best of it, but I had 13.5 with Syracuse, and I'm like, are they not going to cover this number?
It got squirrely.
It got a little. I mean, they were down at the half. Old Zevi Eckhaus, dude, was balling, man. Guy played for Bryant in Rhode Island prior to transferring to Wazoo.
Yeah, when you have guys that you didn't even know if those, like, God's watching, did I really know Bryant had a football program? Like, I knew they had a basketball program, but, yeah, like, you could have talked to me in there, like, my waves, like, no football.
Sure.
Like, yeah. Heisman of the bowl season. I know some people were having some Ginty remorse. I found myself tipping my cap to Ashton Ginty in the Penn State game, especially when the guy is, it's the fourth quarter, they're done, and I'm watching him still returning kicks, and I just found myself going, that guy can play for me. Like, you know what I mean? Like, what more do you want? I saw some people saying they had remorse over Cam Scataboo. I'll just give Cam his love. Like, throwing up on the sidelines, I don't know if it was post-New Year's Eve, I don't know if he got the flu, I don't know what it was. But what was it, 240, I think it was 200 and, I want to see if total offense, it was 242 yards of total offense plus another 42-yard touchdown pass. Guy almost put up, accounted for 300 of their, let's see, total, and they had 510. So he counted for 60% of their offense.
Yeah, I think Cam Scataboo, Jeremiah Smith, all of those guys are pretty obvious answers, and I wouldn't, you know, and they're big name guys. I'll just throw out a couple kind of randos.
All right.
In a losing effort, Harold Fannin Jr., my favorite bet of the bowl season was seeing that he needed 11 receptions to break the tight end record.
Yeah, it was like NFL. It was like the NFL was on Sunday, where it's like everyone was just like tracking, like,
and the market was 8.5. I'm like, yeah, we're gonna go over on that. And he was great in a loss. Bowling Green lost that game, but he had 17 catches for 213 yards. Dylan Edwards, the former Colorado Buff, was great in a very fun bowl game the day after Christmas as Kansas State came back to win that one. And Snoop Dogg.
With the Arizona Bowl.
Snoop Dogg, yeah. Didn't get a chance to interview him, unfortunately. Spent a lot of time in the CW broadcast booth. And, you know, he walked by me a couple times. I was on the sidelines for that one.
Did you get a contact high?
But I'll say this about Snoop. It was pretty cool. For a bowl game that, you know, everyone gets their yucks, bowl games are worthless, meaningless. Those kids from Miami of Ohio, when they won that bowl game, they could not have been more excited. They got like a gold chain. All of them did. They were all rocking it. They're all taking selfies after it. So, yeah, that was pretty cool. He was very invested. I don't know if it's going to be a long-term deal, but the vibe of that bowl game was pretty solid. You had a DJ on the field. It was pretty cool. So Snoop Dogg, you get a Heisman for me because you made a bowl game, let's be honest, that was completely and utterly meaningless in the eyes of many on the CW, kind of have some cool moments. And the kid who won the MVP, Kevin Davis, Snoop Dogg was up there rapping about him, calling him Killer Kevin Davis. I was like, that's probably pretty cool for him.
That's got to be an all-time moment. All right, so best game, is there any way it's not Texas-Arizona State?
No, that's the best.
All right, so moving on. This is a different category. Your favorite game. And for what you just mentioned, I loved Illinois-South Carolina. Like, that was a bowl game that felt like there was a lot on the line. You had, like, it was the most Florida thing ever, where you have, like, you have a couple getting married by a large Cheez-It. You had Beamer doing his, like, middle school villain vibe. Burt just with that smirk on his face. Like, I loved it all. That was a great football game.
I think my favorite bowl game was, you know, I worked for Navy. I did some work for them. I was their studio host for 3 years. And after they beat the crap out of Army, won the CIC, to finish the year beating Oklahoma, and that game coming down to a two-point conversion, and shouts to Brent Venables for going for two. Too many of these moron coaches.
Agreed.
My God, stop going for extra points in overtime in a bowl game. Like, Pat Narduppe, like that guy at Pittsburgh, man. You kicked a field goal. It was maddening. Some of these coaches, we had a 6-overtime game the day after Christmas in Detroit. But that was pretty cool to see Navy win that game. And they got, early on in that one, I know you were on the other side, it looked like,
well, boy,
this is men versus boys. And they battled and came all the way back. And then how could we not one last time give a shout, even though he may be back in college next year, to the underdog god, Diego Pavia?
Oh, yeah. No, I had that on what I got right. Like, you knew he was going to cover. Like, that was just awful. Most college football moment of bowl season, Beamer and Burt. Just that, like, that was just kind of old school of, like, two coaches just, like, watching, the little guy going up against the big guy and the big guy just having, like, complete control of the situation. Like, I just loved it.
My most post-college football moment was, you knew P.J. Fleck would embrace the Mayo bath more than anybody on this earth. And he did. And he was so excited that Flava Flav was like the...